First of all, I would like to acknowledge that our church is on Kaurna land and we honour the elders past and present.
You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Good morning and welcome to our service of worship, and especially warm welcome to those visiting us today. My name's Jenny Dyster and I will lead this very special Unitarian Christmas service today. The children will be doing a presentation and readings are related to Christmas, and I will follow the theme and the lead of Charles Dickens, who was a Unitarian who had very definite ideas about the meaning of Christmas. Our Unitarian Church is a spiritual community, one that supports you in seeking and following your own spiritual path. Your path is yours to find and follow. The role of the Church is to support you on that path. We are an inclusive community and welcome everyone, regardless of their gender, preference, identification, ethnic identity, or religious persuasion. It doesn't matter whom you love or whom you worship. You will be respected in this space. The Sunday Club will be picnicking at a nearby reserve, so you may choose to join those families at Richard Park after the coffee hour. It's 4 minutes away. You head north on Osmond Terrace, turn right at McGill Road, and it's opposite Ann Street, so it's not far along McGill Road. You are welcome to the picnic with or without children in tow. Please do join us after the service for coffee, tea and panettone with lemon curd or something that's ice cream-like. There are buckets and buckets of chocolates, so don't head off to the park straight away. And all sorts of bad stuff. And now, I'm so pleased we could start on time because I caught a few bits of the rehearsal today and this children's presentation looks like a bucket of fun to me, and I'm just going to hand over to David and our Sunday Club.
To begin the Sunday Club presentation, some of the children have written some poems about Christmas and one poem reflecting on what he enjoyed doing this year. And there was a bit of a mood of poetry this year because at our Shady Grove camp, David led a session on haiku poems from nature, which were really beautiful. And so inspired by that, some of the children have written some poetry about Christmas. Over to you, Ellie.
Trees in our lounge room, jack-o'-lanterns on our street. This is our Christmas.
Today I have written an acrostic poem using the word Christmas. C, celebration. H, holiday. R, Rudolph. I, ice. S, star. T, tinsel. M, many baubles. A, advent calendar. And S, stocking.
This one has some props.
This year I enjoyed origami. I like flashes, boomerangs, airplanes, ninja stars, push buttons, angels, magic balls, magic cubes, music stars. One of my favourites was magic ball. It can turn into a hat. If I put it on my head, it looks like a pumpkin. Another one of my favourites was the push button. It can be pressed down and lifted up. I use a 3, 4, 6 paper to fold it in different sizes. A few of them were, some of them were very big. Some of them were cute and small. Origami gave me lots of fun. Folding gave me so much happiness.
My acrostic poem about Christmas. C, candy canes and crunchy cookies. H, Holly heralds happiness. R, reindeer racing Rudolph. I, icy icicles. S, Santa slams a sleigh into a snowman. T, trees twinkling with tinsel. M, me and mummy hang the magical mistletoe. A, amazing angels all around. S, stocking stuffed with sweets.
There is joy and happiness. We feel so happy because Christmas is very near. Santa will come to your house.
Okay, now we are going to have the story for all ages, and it's going to be told by the whole Sunday Club. And for this story for all ages, we are going to just pause for 2 seconds, maybe even five. And we will be having an abridged version of Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Every Who down in Whoville likes Christmas a lot. But the Grinch, who lived just north of Whoville, did not. The Grinch hated Christmas the whole Christmas season. Now please, don't ask why. No one quite knows the reason. It could be his head wasn't screwed on just right. It could be, perhaps, that his shoes were too tight. But I think the most likely reason of all may have been that his heart was 2 sizes too small.
They're hanging their stockings, he snarled with a sneer. Tomorrow's Christmas, it's practically here. Then he growled with his Grinch fingers nervously drumming, I must find some way to stop Christmas from coming. For tomorrow, he knew, all the Who girls and boys would wake up bright and early. They'd rush for their toys. And then, oh the noise, 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 noise.
Then the Whos, young and old, would sit down to a feast. They would feast on Who pudding and rare Who roast beast, which was something the Grinch couldn't stand in the least. And then they'd do something he liked least of all. Every Who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, would stand close together with Christmas bells ringing. They'd stand hand in hand and the Whos would start singing. The more the Grinch thought of this Who Christmas sing, the more the Grinch thought, I must stop this whole thing. Why, for 53 years I've put up with it now. I must stop this Christmas from coming. But how?
I know just what to do, the Grinch laughed in his throat. He made a quick Santa Claus hat and a coat and chuckled, what a great Grinchy trick. With his coat and his hat, I look just like Saint Nick. He called his dog Max, then took some red thread and tied a big horn on top of his head, then loaded some bags and some old empty sacks on a old ramshackle sleigh, and he hitched up old Max.
Oh, the windows were dark, quiet snow filled the air. The Whos were all dreaming sweet dreams without care. This is stop number one, the old Grinchy Claus hissed. And then climbed to the roof, empty bags in his fist. Then he slid down the chimney, a rather tight pinch. But if Santa could do it, then so could the Grinch. The little Who stockings all hung in a row. These stockings, he grinned, are the first things to go. Then he slithered and slunk with a smile most unpleasant. Around the whole room he took every present. Pop guns and bicycles, roller skates, drums, checkboards, tricycles, popcorn and plums. And he stuffed them in bags, then the Grinch very nimbly stuffed the bags one by one up the chimney.
Then he snuck to the icebox. He took the whole feast. He took the whole pudding. He took the roast beast. He stuffed all the food up the chimney with a glee. And now, grinned the Grinch, I'll stuff you up the tree. Then the last thing he took was the log for the fire. He left not so much as a crumb for their mouses and did the same thing with to all the other houses.
It was 12:15, all the Who's still abed, all the Who's still a-snooze, when he packed up his sled. Packed up with their presents, the ribbons, the wrappings, the tags, and the tinsel, the trimmings, the trappings. 3,000 feet up the side of Mount Crumpet, he rode with his load to the tip-top to dump it. Poo-poo to the Who's he was grinchishly humming. They were finding out now that no Christmas is coming. They're just waking up. I know just what they'll do. Their mouths will hang open a minute or two. Then the Who's down in the Whoville will all cry boo-hoo.
That is a noise, grinned the Grinch, that I simply must hear. So he paused, and the Grinch put his hand to his ear. And he did hear a sound rising over the snow. It started in low, then it started to grow.
But that sound wasn't sad. Why, this sounded merry. It couldn't be so, but it was so merry. Very! He stared down at Whoville. The Grinch popped his eyes. Then he shook. What he saw was a shocking surprise. Every Who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, was singing without any presents at all.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
He hadn't stopped Christmas from coming. It came. Somehow or other, it came, just the same.
And the Grinch, with his Grinch feet ice cold in the snow, stood puzzling and puzzling. How could it be so? It came without ribbons. It came without bags, tags. It came without packages, boxes, or bags. And he puzzled 3 hours till his puzzle was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more. And what happened then? Well, in Whoville, they say, that the Grinch's small heart grew 3 sizes that day. And the minute his heart didn't feel quite so tight, he whizzed with his load through the bright morning light, and he brought back the toys and the food for the feast. And he himself, the Grinch, carved the roast beast.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings we bring to you and your kin. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And while they're just settling down, I guess that was the story for all ages to reflect upon Christmas and that seeing what the true meaning is. And David has found a beautiful reflection written by Cynthia Frado, which I'm now going to read to help all of us sort of think about Christmas this year. There is something compelling about the fact that Christmas comes no matter what. The celebration of the birth of this baby comes no matter the season of your heart. The baby that would bring a message of universal equality, compassion, forgiveness, and love is reborn again and again, no matter our state of being, indeed, in spite of it. Perhaps that is the real miracle of the season, that hope and possibility cannot be denied. As I contemplate the state of the world at this moment in time, I cannot think of anything more needed than a reminder of our potential to bring peace and healing and possibility into our lives. We don't always feel it or see it or think it is there. But then there comes Christmas. even when we aren't ready to receive it. A reminder that no matter what season of the heart that we are in, no matter what struggles or grief are consuming us, Christmas will not let us forget the light that was born in us, even on the darkest night of our souls. So even if you can't deal with the razzle and the dazzle and the expense of this holiday, at the very least, open the inn door and prepare the manger of your heart for the gentle but powerful message that is seeking to be reborn in you. Never forget that you are a child of the universe. And where there is life, there is light and love and hope waiting to be reborn. Again and again and again. So turn on some twinkling lights, pour yourself a glass of eggnog or not, and wait for that angel chorus to announce your heart's rebirth. And while we reflect on the particular angel chorus that might help us to spread peace and hope, we're going to watch a slideshow that Maureen has very kindly prepared for us. And I think this slideshow shows that amongst the darkest moments of this year, hope and possibility could not be denied.
Days and the dark secret night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands.
If you've been struggling at all to find the joy and the possibility in the darkest hour, the Sunday Club is not something where you have to have an under 18s card. It's just about being young at spirit, or if you want the young at spirit to warm your hearts, you are always welcome to come and join in what we're doing throughout the year. So come and enjoy nature, come and enjoy Maureen's amazing cooking tutorials or the crazy performances of the talent show. We'd love to see you, and it might help you find some joy and possibility in your lives.
We're not doing Candles of Joy because I allowed the time for the Sunday Club today. So this is a virtual Candle of Joy. Thank you. Thank you, Sunday Club. And now I think you've got some fun outside today.
Michael Timko writes, Charles Dickens' famous novel about Ebenezer Scrooge changed the celebration of Christmas into what we think of as traditional today, an occasion to give to those less fortunate and to gather family and friends around laden dinner tables and Christmas trees filled with lights, decorations and toys. Written shortly after Dickens joined a Unitarian church, A Christmas Carol became his most famous novel and the one most representative of his Unitarian beliefs. Born and baptised into the Anglican Church, Dickens turned to Unitarianism in his 30s. His letters, speeches and novels all show how he hated dogma. The Church's hand is at its own throat because of the doctrinal wranglings of the various parties. Here more popery, there more Methodism, many forms of consignment to eternal damnation. These things cannot last, he wrote. Throughout his life, Dickens was allied with the British Unitarians philosophically and socially. His oldest friend, John Forster, was a devoted member of the Hanover Square Unitarian congregation. In 1842, Dickens travelled to America and chronicled his disillusionment with that country's institutions, especially slavery, in his American Notes. Yet Dickens praised his visit to Boston, where he met Ralph Waldo Emerson and William Ellery Channing, the leading figures of American Unitarianism. His interest in Unitarianism was virtually the only enthusiasm he managed to bring back with him undamaged at the end of the trip, writes Victorian scholar Robert Newsom. On returning to London, Dickens took a pew at the Little Portland Street Chapel and became close friends with the minister. Disgusted with our established church and daily outrages on common sense and humanity, Dickens wrote in a letter, I have carried into effect an old idea of mine and joined the Unitarians, who would do something for human improvement if they could, and who practiced charity and toleration. Dickens himself worked tirelessly for a wide range of charitable causes, raising funds for soup kitchens, immigration schemes, housing associations, prison reform, hospitals, adult education, and disabled artists. He believed that through his fiction, he could promote moral solutions to social ills and could change society for the better. All Dickens' novels reflect the central ideas of 19th century Unitarianism, the belief that Jesus was a human being who exemplified a truly religious life, the rejection of materialism and the doctrine of necessity, the rejection of a God of stern judgment, a disdain of theological controversy, the rejection of dogma, an inclusive rather than an exclusive religion, and an emphasis on doing good works. In A Christmas Carol, without once mentioning Jesus, Dickens shows that it is possible to experience a conversion, not necessarily based on a specific religious experience, but a personal regeneration that leads one to help others. With Scrooge's transformation, his change of heart, Dickens illustrates that his readers too can be converted from a harsh, complacent, selfish worldview to one of love, hope and charity, and like Scrooge, can again become part of the human community. For Dickens, that was the true meaning of Christmas.
The ghosts of Unitarian Christmas. It was Christmas Eve, a time when any sensible person stays safe in his house with a good book, but then Ben's reading lamp burned out. In later months, when Ben looked back on these dreams that he had on Christmas Eve, because they were dreams, obviously, what else could they be? He usually blamed them on the pressures of his job, the cuts, the downsizing, the constant need to do more with less. Except once in a while, when he recalled them in more detail, he blamed himself at how insensitive he'd been to the clerk at the discount store. It had been so out of character, because he wasn't a rude person, really, most of the time. He felt guilty about it almost immediately. Pressure, guilt. He knew where that's where strange dreams came from. Occam's razor easily sliced up any more elaborate explanations. Ben hadn't even meant to be at the discount store, or any store for that matter. It was Christmas Eve, after all, a time when any sensible person stays safe in the house with a good book. He knew that the streets would be full of people. People who were foolish enough to, one, celebrate a holiday whose only real purpose was to sell the junk multinational corporations manufacture in China, and two, put off buying their share of the junk until the very last minute. Ben had no patience for large mobs of stupid people. But then his reading lamp burned out, and he couldn't find a spare anyway. So there he was, parked on the grass at the extreme edge of the lot, then sonically assaulted by Jingle Bell Rock as he entered the Too Bright store, then jostled by panicked shoppers looking for whatever can't-miss toy that the store had just sold out of 2 weeks ago. Bulbs. Good, sensible, energy-efficient bulbs. Not coloured, not flashing, or suitable for the nose socket of a plastic reindeer. They were hard to find. Then he waited in an endless line behind a woman whose two children wouldn't stop nagging her for better presents and more of them. And just when he thought the whole ordeal was almost over, the clerk, an obviously exhausted young woman with a fake smile on her face, had the gall to wish him Merry Christmas. That was the last straw. Christmas, he snapped. Did I say I was a Christian? Don't make assumptions about my religion. Happy Hanukkah, she ventured, but Ben just glared at her. Glad you'll... something rather Kwanzaa? Ben made an inarticulate, dismissive noise that probably came out sounding like, bah, then went on the attack. Is there a law that says I have to celebrate something? Can't I just enjoy life? Why can't all you people leave me alone? The fake smile stayed in place. Have a nice evening, she said weakly, probably knowing that she'd be fired if she responded in kind. Ben was starting to feel like a bully, but having come this far, he couldn't back down, so he stomped out of the store dramatically. What a jerk, said the next customer in line, but the clerk said nothing. Back at home, the bulb worked, but Pickwick Papers didn't seem as interesting as he expected. So Ben scrapped the reading idea and tried going to bed early. This hardly ever worked. And he didn't think it was working tonight either, but every few minutes he'd open his eyes and survey the darkened room. Then on the back of his eyelids he saw an odd green glow. And when he opened his eyes he saw a shimmering familiar shape. Marley, he said. Ben, long time no see, answered the shape. Now, Marley and Ben had co-chaired the finance committee at their Unitarian Universalist Church until the older man's fatal heart attack a few months before. "Marley," Ben said in surprise, "you're a ghost." "Don't be stupid," Marley answered. "There aren't any ghosts, you know that. I'm something you ate." "I skipped supper," Ben objected. "Well, then, that explains it." Ben felt very awake now, and he hated to be condescended to. "Marley," he said, "you're dead and translucent." The ghost looked down and shook his head. "Can we just skip over this bit and move things along?" he asked. "You've no idea how embarrassing this is for me." Ben shrugged and Marley continued, "Look, it's one of these Christmas visitations, so I'm supposed to deliver a message. You know the drill, three more ghosts, they teach you the true meaning of a Unitarian Christmas, yada, 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 got it?" "I guess," Ben answered. "So you're a ghost full time, or is this just a gig you pick up at Christmas?" "Things are tight. You take the jobs you can get," Marley answered. But he was already starting to fade. "Look, love to chat, but I've got to go." "Don't let them touch the endowment!" The room was dark again. "Weird," Ben commented to no one. But he was sure that in the bright light of day, he'd come up with a rational explanation. So he closed his eyes and tried to go back to sleep. When he opened them again, the room was brightly lit by multiple candelabras and a man in a dark Victorian suit stood at the foot of the bed. "I am the ghost of Unitarian Christmases past," he announced. "You're going to set off the smoke alarm," Ben said. He took a closer look at his visitor and then picked up the book from his bedside table and stared at the back cover. "You're Charles Dickens," he stated. "It's the cutbacks," said the ghost. "We've had to double up roles." "So you're really a Unitarian ghost?" Ben asked. "We didn't just put you on those famous UU lists because you were a good guy and none of the other religions claimed you." "I was impressed," he said, "when I met Channing and Emerson. Then I joined the little Portland Street Chapel when I went home to London, but that's not what I'm here to show you." He snapped his fingers, and suddenly they were in a room full of people dressed in clothes that resembled the ghosts. A man dragged an evergreen tree to the corner away from the fireplace and started propping it up while the others watched with puzzled expressions. "Unitarians didn't just inherit Christmas from Orthodox Christian sects," the ghost explained. "To a large extent, we invented it, or rather reinvented it. For years, the Orthodox didn't know what to do with Christmas. I mean, after all, Easter was the big religious holiday. In England, Christmas looked more like the Saturnalia than anything Christian. The actual carolling tradition was more like trick-or-treating than anyway we picture it now. Rowdy mobs of the poor would stand outside the houses of the rich and intimidate them into offering food and drink. The Puritans hated the whole idea so much that Massachusetts Bay Colony would fine you for celebrating Christmas." "Who are these people?" "Well, we're in Massachusetts, Cambridge, in 1832, in the home of Charles Follen, Unitarian minister and abolitionist. It's 7 years before he'll found the congregation in Lexington that's named after him, and right now he's bringing a tradition from his native Germany to America. This is the first Christmas tree in New England." Dickens snapped his fingers again. A man was dipping a steel pen into an inkwell. "Edmund Sears," the ghost explained, "another Unitarian minister writing, 'It came upon a midnight clear,' in 1849. Snap. Now a woman was writing, Lydia Child, good friend of Margaret Fuller, writing Over the River and Through the Woods. Snap. A man was pecking out a familiar melody on a piano. James Pierpont, music director of his brother's Unitarian church in Savannah. That's jingle bells," Ben said, and he got a sinking feeling. "We're not responsible for jingle bells rock, are we?" Not even a little bit. The ghost snapped his fingers again, and now it was Dickens sitting at a desk with a blazing fire behind him. When I wrote A Christmas Carol, I wasn't really recapturing the lost spirit of Christmas. I was conjuring it out of a whole cloth. My Christmas wasn't about the birth of one sect's saviour. It was about the brotherhood and sisterhood of all people. It was about compassion and friendship and family, universal values. It was Unitarian Christmas, Ben realised out loud. Dickens snapped his fingers, and Ben was once again alone in his darkened bedroom. When he opened his eyes some time later, another familiar figure sat beside his bed. I know you, Ben said excitedly. You're the ghost of Unitarian Christmas Present. But you're great. I've seen all your movies and I eat... Let's not make a big thing of it, the ghost said, the bright lights reflecting from his famous blue eyes. I'm just a guy. With a wave of his hand, the scene changed. That's my church, Ben said. The Midnight Christmas Eve Service. Well, I've never been to one, Ben said. The sanctuary was lit by a single candle, and as they walked up the centre aisle, the singing began. A carol was followed by a reading and then by a hymn, and at each interval a few more candles were lit, so the room gradually became brighter. It's a beautiful ritual, the ghost observed. Each person gets out of it what they bring in, and a little bit more. That's how community works. Gradually the church got brighter. During the final song, the flame was passed from person to person until everyone held a lit candle. The ghost pointed to someone lighting his neighbour's candle. This man's a UU Christian. The story of Jesus touches something deep in him. The fact that his fellow parishioners are here with him, listening to his story and singing his songs, means the world to him. Two pews up, an old woman supported herself with both arms, and a girl of 8 held the hymn book open for her. She's been coming to this service since she was a girl herself. In her mind, 5 generations are here, everyone from her grandmother to her little granddaughter. And some people wish they were here, the ghost continued, waving his hands, but they can't be. The fluorescence of the discount store were harsh in comparison to the sanctuary's candlelight. The young clerk sighed over the cash register. She's off by $4.83, said the ghost. She's counted it 3 times. Reluctantly, the woman reached under the counter for her purse, found a 5 and made change for herself. On the strap of the purse was a flaming chalice pin. She's a UU, Ben asked. You're surprised, said the ghost. You think all store clerks are fundamentalists? Well, I didn't say that, Ben protested to no one. He was back in his bedroom alone. The third ghost appeared almost immediately, its face and body hidden by a dark cloak. In a creepy voice it announced, I am the Christmas of the Christmas. I am the ghost of the Christmas yet. Marley? Ben guessed. The cowl fell back to reveal a face. It's the cutbacks, Marley said. We've had to double up roles. You're looking less green now. Can we get on with this? He stamped his foot and they stood out the front of Ben's church and it was dark. This is the future. I mean, it's a future, not the future. If it was the future, there wouldn't be any free will, which makes the whole exercise pointless. Ben started to comment, but Marley continued his spiel. In this future, the Unitarian Christmas, the Dickens Christmas, is gone. Over. There are sectarian types who think society is fighting a war on Christmas and feel oppressed. And there are mirror image radicals on the other side who resent having a sectarian holiday forced on them. And then there are multinational corporations selling junk they make in China and running obnoxious ads to make people think they actually want it. And that's the Christmas of this future. It sucks. And some little part of it is your fault. Got it? Got it, Ben said. Sunlight was streaming through his bedroom window. Ben looked at the clock and realised that he could still make it to a small Christmas morning meditation service. Drinking coffee afterwards, he introduced himself to the store clerk and apologised. Her name was Melanie, and Ben was surprised how gracious she was about the whole event. As they parted, she asked, "So, if not Merry Christmas, what should I wish you?" "Peace on earth," Ben suggested. "Peace," Melanie agreed. "You can't go wrong with peace." And that was a story from the UU magazine, and the author was Doug Muda. And you might like to stand now for the benediction. It's time now to depart, to go forward to our lives and to the world. May joy be your companion, whether you're with others or alone. May love be your strength. And may the gift of community dwell in your heart, for here in this place, you will be welcome always, whenever you choose and whenever you need. Thank you.
Time flies by in the yellow and green. Stick around and you'll see what I mean. There's a mountain top that I'm dreaming of. If you need me, you know where I'll be.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.
I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone.